and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, candidates for U.S. Senate. Single-term incumbent Mark Begich takes the stage alongside challenger Libertarian Mark Fish. Democrat Mark Begich was the mayor of Anchorage before being elected to the U.S. Senate in 2009. Libertarian candidate Mark Fish is a retired Alaska Army National Guardsman who sits at the helm of the state's Libertarian Party. Republican candidate Dan Sullivan, also running for U.S. Senate, was invited but declined to participate in the chamber's debate. This debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. It was recorded October 27th at the Denina Center. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow is the debate's moderator. He starts us off.
Today's debate structure will be a traditional debate, opening statements. We'll have a half dozen questions from designed by our Anchorage Chamber Legislative Committee. We'll have two candidate-to-candidate questions. If we have time, we'll work in some audience questions, and then we'll have closing statements. To begin with, the topic will be the Alaska National Guard. And we'll start with opening statements. And Mr. Begich, we'll start with you. 2 minutes, please.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Mark, for being here. I know the Chamber has done a great effort, as always, in hosting these on a regular basis and been very helpful in getting people to know what the candidates stand for, what they're about, and who they are. So again, thank you. I'm sorry it's not the full cadre of us, but Mark and I will be happy to be here. You know, this debate and these debates are helpful for our community to understand the issues that we face. And when you think of Alaska, it's not about Democratic ideas or Libertarian ideas or Republican ideas. It's about all our ideas working together to figure out how we move Alaska forward. I've been here many times to the chamber. When I was mayor, we did a lot of stuff together, and we worked on many different issues. I remember when I came in the mayor's office, we worked on a variety of issues, trying to get rid of a $33 million deficit. At the same time, we built a city. We built a facility that we're standing in today, added more police officers. We added two new middle schools and three new fire stations. All that work that I did as mayor came in real handy as I moved on to the United States Senate, because it gave me some, obviously, knowledge of how to make things happen. But we took that same skill and put it to work, opening up the Arctic for the first time in exploration. The National Petroleum Reserve is now moving forward for the first time in actual oil and gas development, not both on CD5 and GMT1, when completed in the next 2 years, averaging 46,000 barrels of oil a day. Making sure we kept the F-16s up in Fairbanks and now expanding Fairbanks' economy by moving forward on the F-35s. Also worked to get a waiver for the No Child Left Behind law, which was a burden for us here in Alaska. And also delivered on health care for our veterans. Now veterans, no matter where they live in Alaska, they can get health care from the tribal clinics, and the VA will reimburse them, so they don't have to fly to Anchorage or even Seattle. While we're doing that, we also lowered the annual deficit of the federal government by 70%. I'll look forward to the debate, and again, thank you very much for the opportunity to have this dialogue with you today.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Mr. Fish, 2 minutes opening statement.
Well, I know I am not as well known to you folks as Senator Begich is, so I have to take some time into introducing who I am and what I stand for. You know, I've been in Alaska since 1962. I married a girl from Spinard, been married for 25 years, spent 20 years in Alaska Army National Guard Aviation Unit, flew all over the state, been on multiple disaster missions, and seen Alaskans at their best. You know, I also have worked out after my retirement. I've also worked outside in pushing the principles that I feel dearly. An individual has a right to their life, liberty, and property. Government's sole function is to preserve those rights. You know, it has gotten way too out of hand now, and I'd like to point some of those things out. And I hope to explore that philosophy more in this debate. What we have to do is, I guess what I have to do, is impress on you that there's three things that these candidates here are selling. You know, one sells hope and change, hope for the future, hope that things will get better. The other one is selling fear of that change. You know, we have to stay the same. We can't allow these changes to happen. Well, don't vote for your hopes. Don't vote for your fears. I want you to vote on faith. not in me, not in anybody else but yourself. You know, we live in the richest place on earth as far as natural resources go, and you are the greatest people here that are capable of using that to the benefit of all Alaskans. And I think that's what we need to start focusing on. My role as a senator would be to get you access to the natural resources that you can utilize to lift all boats in Alaska. And that's what I hope to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fish.
Mr. Fish will stay with you for our first question. The topic is the Alaska National Guard. According to your bio, you are a retired Alaska Army National Guard Staff Sergeant. Given the growing scandal in the Alaska Guard, what are your thoughts about how the federal government might be able to ensure adequate oversight so this doesn't happen again?
Well, the first thing to realize is the complexity of National Guard. First of all, I'm retired after 20 years in the National Guard. I'm not considered a veteran. Well, why not? You know, well, there's different roles that National Guard members play. Are you on active duty? Are you on a civilian technician? Are you a traditional part-time soldier? Are you Title IX? All of these things come into play when investigating these things. And when you have all those different roles in the same room, in the same deployments, the problem is where do you go? And certainly everybody likes to funnel it off. One thing that happened is in the rush to war, things get dropped. I know for a fact that since I retired, deployment has been the top priority of the National Guard. You know, it's an important wartime mission that they were doing. So a lot of things get lost along the way. I tried to impress on my troops, you know, that I was sending the troops that I trained to send over to the battlefield, you know, do your job. Just hold to the standards. You were trained for this. Just do your job. Unfortunately, what happens when we go to war, people throw out the standards, throw out the rules, and get all excited about this is war, things are different. They're not different, folks. We've got to be consistent about this. It's called being professional. And I think the governor did the right thing in discharging the general, and I think the process is going forward, and you'll see more results.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. Senator Begich, does the federal government have an oversight role to play?
Well, there is a role, and there is a careful balance between the Guard Bureau in Washington, D.C., and states' rights in regards to the State Guard here, the National Guard here. But first on the incident that's occurred or the scandal that's out there, you know, I spoke on this right when this broke out probably 4 years ago in the first stages. We saw some issues coming in. We saw people coming to our office. We moved very quickly to get the Guard Bureau from the national end to start looking at this issue and seeing what we can find and how she'll push it out. But one of the things that we found very quickly was the National Guard Bureau is limited. If the governor doesn't request them in to investigate, then they have no authority to discuss or talk to employees within the Guard. So they have a limited role, even though there's a lot of federal resources that go into the Guard Bureau. So I've introduced legislation very recently to try to rectify this, because you need, the Guard Bureau nationally is not beholden to the governor, they're beholden to the men and women who serve in the Guard. And if there are situations that are occurring, especially when we are hearing about them, the Guard Bureau needs to have the ability to go in there and do the investigation to make sure there's no wrongdoing, maybe corruption or issues of fraud, or in this case, sexual assault, sexual harassment, all these issues. And there's a limitation. So we need to rectify that and correct that so we do have some authority. On top of that, again, I just want to echo, I think it is outrageous what is going on, and it's a slow process right now, and I think there's a lot of issues laying on the table that the governor should step up more on. But again, from a federal end, we have an ability to do something.
Thank you. Senator Begich, we'll stay with you. The topic is ballot initiatives. There are three statewide ballot initiatives on the November 4th ballot, legalizing and regulating marijuana, increasing the minimum wage, and protection for Bristol Bay. Where do you stand on those three ballot initiatives?
I get 1 minute, so I'll give you the answer, then follow up. First, legalization of marijuana, I'm a no on minimum wage. I'm a yes, and on the Bristol Bay issue, I'm a yes in protecting Bristol Bay. I've already come out against the issue in Bristol Bay. I think the mine there would do damage long-term to that region, especially in the fisheries. I chair the Fisheries and Coast Guard Committee for the United States Senate. And it's important to look at our fisheries in a sustainable way. I think that would be problematic. That does not mean I'm against mining. I've supported Niblack, Bocan, Kensington, Greens Creek, Donlin. All these we have helped extend and help their permitting process, but this one's just wrong mine, wrong place. In regards to the minimum wage, as a small business owner, both myself and my wife, we've always paid above minimum wage. This is not going to damage business. This will be a positive in the sense that more people end up with more money in their pocket. They end up spending that in the economy. But on top of that, minimum wage will help raise people out of poverty. It won't be significant, but it will have an impact in a positive way. And I have seen the impacts when you look at minimum wage history and where it has been raised, what has happened to the economy afterwards. It's not this fear that the economy is going to suddenly collapse. It just doesn't. And I can tell you from our businesses, we always pay above minimum wage. It's a great way to retain your employee when you pay them well, especially small businesses. But they take that money and they spend it right back in the economy. And where do you think they do? They're spending it in our businesses or your businesses. So, and on legalization of marijuana, 12-year-old son, I just have no interest in it.
Thank you, Senator Begich.
Mr. Fish, where do you stand on the three statewide ballot initiatives?
Okay, I'm for the legalization of marijuana because what our current policy, 100,000 Alaskans use marijuana. Each one of those are in danger. They're in danger of being felons. They're in danger of 5 years in federal penitentiaries for what they do. Now, some people say that that'll never happen. But how would you feel if you are in danger every day of your life from the government for something that you do out of a habit? It may be a bad habit, and for kids it certainly is. But what we're doing right now is hurting our kids. They have access to more potent, more dangerous drugs because of the same people that deal the illegal marijuana now deal all those other drugs that from the same source to the same folks. So regardless of whether this proposition passes or not, we have to address the federal classification. And I could go on that, but I know minimum wage, people like Walt Whitman, Milton Friedman, myself, all say minimum wage hurts the poorest and the youngest folks. Senator Begich pays above minimum wage not because he's a generous guy, it's because it makes a profit that way. And that's what should be driving the force on wages. If minimum wage is so good, why don't we raise it higher? As far as the Bristol Bay Initiative, I'll get to it later.
Thank you, Mr. Fish. Mr. Fish, we'll stay with you. The topic is Social Security. Experts have predicted that the Social Security Trust Fund will run out by 2033. Others say even after that, Social Security will still be able to pay out 75% of benefits. Question, is Social Security in trouble, and what are your ideas to stabilize the program?
Well, of course it's in trouble. Any Ponzi scheme will eventually run into trouble. And that's essentially what it is and what it was. What we need to do, though, we made a commitment to those people that paid into it. That's not an entitlement. That's their money. They earned it. They should get it back. But we cannot move on to the future with an unsustainable program that is completely robbed before the time for those payouts come. What we need to do is move to trusting each and every individual to maintain their own lives. And what's government's role in that? Simply in one of education. If people know what's good for them, they generally have a tendency to do that. So I have faith in our young people and their own resources to manage their own lives successfully. And I would leave it in their hands other than a bureaucrat in Washington.
Okay, just a follow-up on the question, Mr. Fish. So your answer is that you would basically leave these folks at the mercy of the stock market? Is that what you're saying?
I would leave folks at the mercy of their own desires, and their own whim, Who doesn't work in their own best interest? If they have the right information, they will always work in. And government should be responsible for providing that information.
Thank you. Senator Begich, Social Security?
Remember, Social Security is not, it's a supplemental retirement. It's a supplemental to what you're setting aside for later years. A couple things. Social Security, and I think finally someone stated the facts right, that it's not going broke, that you always hear out there. It has an issue of if at a certain point they only can pay 75% of its benefits. So what do? It's a mathematical problem. How do you solve? First off, you have a fundamental belief. Do you believe in Social Security? I do. You know, I see people, I remember one out of 10 Alaskans receive Social Security in some form or another, not just elderly, but also disabled and others. So it's not just for later in life, some are using it today. So it is a good program, it's 1% administration costs, but we do have to fix it. There's couple fixes you can do. One, right now, the way it works is once you reach $117,000 in income, wages, anything above that, you don't pay Social Security on. In Medicare, you do, but not on Social Security. So that means I'll just pretend here that Andrew makes $117,000. I'll say Bill Pop makes $117 million. That's okay, Bill. Nicole, you should talk to him later. I know something. But the fact is, both of them pay the exact Social Security tax, total dollars. So I would raise the cap, just like we have on Medicare, as well as fix the inflation adjustment for elderly, because it doesn't really recognize their position. The reality is, it will add 75 years. There's a big difference between the opponent who's not here. He wants to means test it and add age to it, which means you have to work longer to get what you paid in.
And a follow-up, Senator Begich, I think it was 10 years ago that President George W. Bush proposed investment accounts where you would invest your Social Security by yourself. So there's been a number of different ideas. Why was something that's so critical to the country, why has it taken so long to reach some kind of compromise on this?
Well, first, the idea he had, can you imagine in 2008, those seniors who had their money in a stock market or people waiting, what would have happened to them in 08, 09, and 10 especially? But put that aside. I think the challenge in Washington, D.C. is this is an issue that won't be crisis until 2037 or so, right in that range. So people wait. It's kind of natural habit, right? Or who we are as humans, we always wait to the last minute to try to do something. So people see this problem, but they're building and dealing with today's issues. And so from my perspective, we have to constantly put this issue on the table to force folks to talk about it. Now there is a difference. There's a much younger group in the U.S. Senate today than ever before. And they look long-term. You know, a lot of us have kids, 12-year-old son, Jacob. We look at things much differently. So a lot of us are gravitating to these longer term issues. These budget battles happen every year, but Social Security, we got to deal with. And I think there is a dynamic changing to look at these issues in a longer term. We have to on Social Security.
Thank you. Senator Begich, we'll stay with you. The topic is immigration reform. As you know, immigration reform has become a political flashpoint. Terms like amnesty and border security have been thrown around to score political points. Question, is there hope for immigration reform, or will this forever be a partisan issue?
You always have to have hope. Otherwise, you can't get anything done in Washington. So let me first say this. Immigration reform legislation did pass the Senate in a bipartisan effort, and it did do several things. It added border protection, 40,000 people to continue to work our borders, increase the capacity. Make sure we follow up on our visas. 40% of the legal immigration in our country comes from actually visas that are government issued that have expired and we didn't follow up on them. So it improves that situation. Also requires anyone in the country that's undocumented, you're gonna have to, if you've committed a crime, you're going back to your home country. In the meantime, you go to the back line, you pay your fines, pay your taxes, learn English, and have a job. You can't just jump to the front. And I'm gonna say this, Andrew, there's an ad running, it's a constant ad. And it talks about how I support amnesty. I do not support amnesty. I don't know where they get this, but do I support a bipartisan piece of legislation that myself and Senator Murkowski supported, as well as other Republicans and Democrats? Yes, because this is what we need to move to, a comprehensive immigration policy. We also, in that immigration policy, solve some problems for Alaska with our fisheries industry, our tourism industry, making sure they have an ability when there is no workforce within a certain region or certain area of our state that they can reach out and bring people in order to work in this industry. We put that in there. It's Alaska provision. So Lisa Murkowski and I have supported this immigration reform. The House hasn't acted on it.
Just a follow-up, Senator Begich. About 6 months ago, the big concern was undocumented minors crossing
yes.
the borders. We heard it was almost daily about this influx of thousands of young kids coming across the border. We've heard very little over the last couple of months. What is the status with that?
Here's the status. Actually, I want to say one thing. It's amazing how quick news comes and goes in our country. I mean, today we're talking about one issue, tomorrow might be another. That number has dropped dramatically. I want to say that number might be down to 300 or 400 a week at most. Many folks have gone back over the border. In other words, we've sent plane loads back. You rarely read about that, you know, because they were responding. There are some still going through a process of deportation, or they will be allowed here for asylum because of situations back in their home countries. So it's a lot less. The pressure isn't like it was. The message got clear. If you come into the United States, the odds are you're going back, children or not. And now there's a process of a group of children that they're going through to determine if they stay here or if they go back to their home country, depending on the situation. But it has dramatically reduced, and down 300-400 a week now, I think.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Fish, immigration reform, is there hope?
Well, there's that word again, hope. Look, I'm for open borders, but that means borders, right? Without borders, you don't have a country. We have to ensure that anybody that's willing and capable and a citizen, to be a citizen in good standing, is welcome. Bring in their resources and wealth and creativity with them. But we have to stop bad people from crippling our system. And why is these young children being forced on our borders? It's our policies, folks. If you look at where they're coming from, they're all narco states. They're all feeding drugs, illegal drugs, oftentimes marijuana, into our very lucrative markets here in the United States. $60 to $100 million a year is spent on marijuana in Alaska. You know, that's big business. Those people need the money. They're organizing gangsters. They're fed arms by the Obama administration and chase these kids to the only hope they have is the United States. Let's stop this stupid nonsense of unintended consequences manipulating the world to our will and protect our own. And I think that's what we need to do. And as far as these children, they're coming up through the same trade routes that are smuggling drugs. Every time that we're successful at shutting down the drugs, they'll change to another market, folks.
And a follow-up, Mr. Fish, what about there's an estimated 12 to 13 million undocumented immigrants in this country, which is basically the population of the state of Ohio. So what do we do with those folks that are already here?
Well, I expect everyone in this country to follow the rule of law. But, you know, unfortunately, we're not leading by example when you have a president that writes regulations that are contrary to the acts of Congress. But what I would do with those folks is certainly they'll have a chance to get back in line, but they've got to do it right. They've got to pay the price for violating the law. What is that price? Well, I wouldn't make it so onerous that it would never happen. I wouldn't convict these people as felons if they were actively pursuing. But I think there should be a fine that they pay for every year that they've been in here illegally. And once they come clean and own up and respect our rule of law, then we can decide if they're citizens or not.
Mr. Fish, we'll stay with you. The next topic is national security. A recent poll showed that 47% of Americans feel less safe than any time since 9/11. How would you assure voters that your leadership will result in a safer America?
Well, national security is a big problem. One of the biggest problems of national security is a stable economy. 10 years of war, folks, has crippled us. You see the gas prices going down now only because we're not expending it in foreign that resource in foreign fields someplace else. So first of all, what we got to stop doing is have this military adventurism that is doing nothing but creating us less secure. Four presidents have bombed Iraq. Do you feel any securer now than you did four presidents ago? No, it's not working. So stop this series of unintended consequences would be the first thing to do. The other thing to do is instead of having our soldiers, our Marines, guard poppy fields in Afghanistan, maybe they should come home and guard our borders. You know, maybe they should be, guardsmen increasing the National Guard. And I have to take exception to say where I think more federal intervention in the National Guard is the answer. The responsibility lies with the Commander-in-Chief and on active duty for the state, that should be the governor. Unfortunately, the National Guard has turned into a budget reserve for foreign expeditions, something that was never intended to be. So now we're stuck with a state defense force that is really diminished and not funded by anyone. It's a tragedy. We got to bring our militia boys back home, have them defend our own borders, and that's where I'd start with national security.
Senator Begich,
I think there's several things, and I'll try to do this in this very short period. And that is, first, Alaska's at a very unique position. You know, it used to be we would fight for trying to make sure people understood where we were from a national security perspective. That's not the case anymore. That's why the F-16s are staying in Fairbanks. That's why we're now, starting next year, be the next location for the F-35s. Why we've invested hundreds of millions of dollars now in missile defense when 6 years ago they were thinking that it wasn't that important. And now it is because of our Pacific theater that we have to reassess and reassign some of our resources for. But another piece of our military is our military personnel. You know, the out here at the commissary, the military, DOD, Pentagon wanted to cut the commissary here. Now, some might think that's a great idea because there's other shopping here. Here's the impact that would have. It would cost an average family of four on the military another $2,000 a year. They wanted to cut TRICARE support. They wanted to cut the commissary. They wanted to cut the housing alliance, housing assistance. And here's the reality of our military. 39% of our military families on base here who go to school get a free lunch program. That means they're below poverty. That is unacceptable. If we want a strong military, we have to support the families. Everything I've done, and now there's no more commissary cut over there, there's no more TRICARE cut, and there's no more housing allowance cut, because the work I've done through Appropriations Committee to ensure that does not happen. Because if we're going to have a strong military, you've got to build a strong family that supports the military. And I've seen time and time again the Pentagon going after the families.
Thank you. Senator Begich, we'll stay with you. The topic is health care. Healthcare changes in costs have risen to one of the top concerns of Anchorage Chamber members this year, simply due to the uncertainty. The term Obamacare is thrown around as a source of blame, but we hear very few solutions. Is the Affordable Care Act salvageable?
Yes. I think there's a lot of work. I mean, our system was broken before the Affordable Care Act passed. 34% of Alaskans who want to get individual policies were denied. They were unable to get it. They were out of the system. So they ended up at a high cost, or they ended up not getting insurance and ended up in the emergency room. What can be done? If we have actually people who want to sit down and work together, this would be part of the equation. I presented a copper plan, which has been reviewed by outsiders, to consider if it's part of the equation, it would reduce premiums by about 18%. I have Republicans who support the idea, but they will not participate until after this election. They say, no, Begich, we're going to use Obamacare, Affordable Care, and beat on you for the next several months, which they've done that every time you turn on your TV. But we do need to make some changes, and that is one for example. But also, how has it impacted us? I mean, for example, the governor should accept, and you guys, I know the state chamber has supported this, the governor should accept the Medicaid expansion. States that have accepted the Medicaid expansion have seen rate increases of around 2 or 3% only, because they meld the system together. You know, for us not to expand Medicaid in this state, that means 40,000, upwards to 40,000 Alaskans are not covered. And at the end of the day, where do you think they go? They go into the emergency room, the highest cost door to enter. And who pays for it? The rest of us who are insured. So absolutely there are abilities to improve this piece of legislation, ensure we have access and affordable health care for all. But you got to work at it and not ignore it.
And just a follow-up, Senator Begich, we keep hearing through various reports that premiums are going up under the Affordable Care Act, and then we hear conflicting stories that no, they're staying flat or rising at a 1 or 2% increase. Yeah. Can you talk
yes,
to that?
Yes, I'd be happy to. This is an interesting one. The governor put out, or his person at the Division of Insurance put out a press release, and just talked about one of all the plans, the one plan that would go up 37%. He failed to talk about the other plans, and on top of that, about 2 weeks later, I think Dermot Cole did an article about the small group plans that are only going up 2, 3, 4, 5% only, very small amounts. You never read about that. Or the state Aetna plan that's going to be flat, basically. That's not going up. So you don't hear about it because it wasn't politically advantageous, to be frank with you. The letter that the governor sent out was all about Obama this, Obama that. You know, Obama's going to be gone in 2 years. Let's focus on what's good for Alaska. And the other thing is, they didn't take the money that was offered by the federal government to do rate review. States that have done this, taken this resource to really vigorously take a rate review and hold these insurance companies to task, our state didn't do it. The net result is, yeah, you're going to see increases when you don't have good, solid rate review. Unbelievable.
Thank you. Mr. Fish, the Affordable Care Act, is it salvageable?
Well, the Affordable Care Act does no longer exist, folks. It's been changed 44 times, 24 times by regulation. Now, I still have anyone able to tell me how you can change a congressional act by presidential regulation. That's 24 times that has been manipulated without the consent of the people. It is broke. You know, we did have problems. You know, we had a healthcare car that had a few ticks in the engine, so we brought it into a mechanic. And it came out of that tune-up running crappier than it did before. So what are we going to do about it? Are we going to take it back to the same mechanics? You know, folks, when you buy a lemon, you trash it and get a new car. You know, and that what does that new car entail? Well, what we have to do is we have to number one, remove the unnecessary regulation that prevents people from knowing what they're getting. Why can I know what price that I am paying for my medicine? Why can't I know what price I'm paying for my procedures? Why can't I shop around to different places to get those insurances and procedures done? That's what people are doing too. You know, there I go.
And I'll ask a follow-up on healthcare, Mr. Fish. You said the prior system had a few ticks in it. The United States was spending the highest percentage per capita on healthcare costs of any country in the world. So what are the few ticks that you see in the prior system?
Well, what the prior system did is they wouldn't allow people to select their own healthcare. There's all bundled packages, just like your cable TV. You got to accept certain things. Right now, even my sister-in-law has a small business with her husband. She's forced to pay for maternity and pregnancy, even though that she is 58 years old and has no other women in her employment or in her household. You know, that's kind of silly. Why can't they customize that? And both systems have that to fail. The other thing is universality. Why can't we go and choose whatever plan wherever it's sold? Why are markets limited? Free markets should not be limited. And if you had a free market approach to healthcare, we would have a better system. There's one time in this country that you could get a checkup from a doctor for a chicken.
Did we have chicken today for lunch?
Mr. Fish, we'll stay with you, sir. Stabilizing oil production is one of the Anchorage Chamber members' top priorities. Question, what will you do on the federal level to open up federal land for oil and gas areas for development?
First thing we have to do is get rid of federal land. You know, this isn't a nutty idea. It's been done east of the Mississippi. Many of those states had 95% of their states belong to the federal government. They had their lands transferred. How come out west here we can't? This is a question that Western governments are now starting to ask, too. You know, we can. Alaska should own the land in its own borders, and we should manage it for ourselves. You know, as I referred to later, we have the resources we need for the prosperity we want. Why are we asking these people for permission? It's our land. Let's just take it. There's a process to do that, too. You know, it's been spelled out. Other states have done it. And frankly, you know, 5,000 miles away in Washington, D.C., they don't share our vision, culture, or ideas. So why should they share the resources of our land? We should be able to dictate what happens. We'd be better stewards. We'd have more prosperity if we did.
Thank you. Senator Begich, opening up federal land.
I wish I could bank that 30 seconds, but.
Get it back for the next question. First, I appreciate Mark's comments, but we have federal land that controls some of our oil and gas industry, so we have to deal with what we have in front of us today. You know, when I came in the office, I can tell you in this room and probably in some other rooms when I was at RDC last week, I know what the talk was. They said, if Mark wins, we'll never open up federal lands, especially in the Arctic, as well as National Petroleum Reserve and others. We went to work very quickly. Arctic, for example, now for the Chukchi and Beaufort Sea is moving forward on exploration. Shell had an issue, but they have resolved it. They're moving forward. The EIS is going to get completed. That's an important piece of the next equation. That puts them back into the field in 2015. But the National Petroleum Reserve, which again has had no oil production out of it since it originally was founded in 1923, finally, CD5, we helped move that forward. The delegation worked double time on that to get the logjam out. End result, that will start next year in production, actually producing oil, 16,000 barrels a day. The following year, GMT1. Again, we hope to see some good news on their road that they need to extend to GMT1. Once that field is operational, again, in the National Petroleum Reserve, that'll produce another 30,000 barrels of oil a day. I will take, and again, I wish, you know, I think we both wish that Dan Sullivan was here, maybe not both of us, but I will tell you, this is one where the state walked away from the table in National Petroleum Reserve. We had to write them letters to try to get them back to the table and negotiate. They wouldn't do it because they didn't get everything they wanted. Well, you try every day to get every piece. Now there's production out of the National Petroleum Reserve.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Alaska candidates for U.S. Senate. You've been hearing from incumbent U.S. Senator Mark Begich and Libertarian candidate Mark Fish. This debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. It was recorded October 27th at the Dena'ina Center. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow is moderating the debate. Let's get back to it.
Thank you. Senator Begich will stay with you. I think I speak for a lot of Alaskans when I say we are sick of the pollsters calling us at night. We are sick of our mailbox being shoved open with endless flyers, and we're certainly sick of the endless negative ads. Is this really what voters can look forward to forever?
You know, in Kenai, they asked us the question, all three of us were there, and you remember that, Mark? They asked us the question, they said, if all the ads were taken off, all these negative ads and positive ads, all the ads were taken off, would anyone switch their vote? And all three of us raised our hand of who you would vote for. It's a sad state of affairs based on the Supreme Court ruling of Citizens United. A lot of these are third-party groups that just advertise. We don't have control over those. They will do what they're going to do. That's their right under the Supreme Court on a 5-4 vote. I sponsored legislation, a constitutional amendment, to reverse that because it is corrosive to our system, absolutely corrosive, because it's just too much money into the system and overloading the system. I have 12-year-olds, 9-year-olds complaining their YouTube channel is all jammed up with ads. And so it is a problem. But at the same time, to get people engaged in the campaign, we got to tell them our story. And, you know, I have two ads up now that are talking about, you know, my mayor's history, because there's misinformation out there. I got to explain what I did as mayor. Also talking about the future of Alaska and what I hope to do as the next U.S. Senator again, being reelected. So you have to have the ads out there. I wish there was a lot more negatives, but I'll tell you, you got to respond. When people beat on you, you know, I see they've changed the ones on the buses from the cartoon with me to a different one today. But you can't let that just go, or that will become fact. I've seen focus groups where people recite news, and it's actually the ads. They're reciting the advertisement. So we got to get this outside money out of it because it is corrosive to the system.
Thank you. Mr. Fish.
Well, it's been corrosive for some time, you know, but I appreciate the fact that the only ads that I have out there are ones that Senator Begich is doing for me. So
we're the only two that believe in stand your ground, that's why.
I think I'll work on him for an endorsement.
I'm game.
You know, but no, you know, people have a right to spend their money any way they want. But corporations are not individuals. And you know why they're doing this is because it works. Why is it working, folks? Why are you going out and selling your vote to the highest bidder and then expect your senators not to? You know, here you go. What we need to do is have a valid, honest debate of all candidates and make your judgment by what they're saying directly looking at your face, directly talking to your eyes. You're the community leaders. You're going to go out here and tell everybody, hey, I like this guy or this the other guy. You should vote for him. And they're going to listen to you because you listen. So why are we listening to the ads? Why are we letting ourselves be bowled over the stuff? Turn the stuff off. That's all you have to do. It'll go away. Especially when I win.
I don't know. They're getting so bad, I'm afraid to leave my house to vote.
We'll find you on the street.
Right.
I know, Ann, can I say, Mark is right. This is, you know, the process of these open debates are, and I give the chamber great credit here. You know, the groups that have done this where everyone gets to be at the table, you know, we're going to have different views. Kenai was another. Kenai Chamber did a great job. They had all of us there. And people walked out of there, I think, Mark, and you tell me if I'm wrong about this, but I think people walked out of there more informed on the issues rather than the sound bites. And so I really give credit to the chamber for opening the door and just letting any candidate come to this table in this forum. I think it's what we have to do as a society if we really want to change things. I didn't mean to. I took your 30 that you had in reserve.
Sorry. Doggone it, I hate to have to agree with you, so I don't.
Okay, now we're going to
That might be the only thing today.
Now we're going to switch into the candidate questions. Mr. Fish, we'll start with you. You have 30 seconds to ask your question. Senator Begich, 60 seconds to respond, and then, Mr. Fish, you will get a 30-second rebuttal. Mr. Fish, your question for
sure.
Senator Begich, please.
You know, I think I would want to explore the legalization of marijuana issue on the federal level. You know, go look at the federal laws, and you can see, you know, 5 years in federal penitentiaries for simple possession. They treat it as a class one narcotic, right up there with cocaine, heroin, LSD. So my simple question is would you support removing that classification to a smaller classification instead of having the most severe penalties imposed on 100,000 Alaskans?
Yeah, first, Mark, I think I would agree with you, because this is what we did on cocaine versus crack cocaine. As you know, we passed something recently in the legislation in Senate, not like in the last 2 years, but in my first 2 years, I think we did it, where there is an unfair and imbalance. You know, if it was crack cocaine, you got a much higher penalty, and if it was powder cocaine, you would not. And it was clearly what we saw was some serious problems of who was ending up in jail for longer periods of time. And we rectified that because it was unfair. In the case of, you know, I don't support the ballot initiative, but I would, as I said, if the ballot initiative passes, we have an obligation in Washington to protect the state's rights on this, and that is not only lowering it, make sure there is not federal intervention in arresting people when the state has already spoken to people as well as now the legislation. On top of that, I think we need to resolve some of the banking situations so people, if that's legal in their state, they can bank that money in federal banks. Wells Fargo, that would be good for you and others, so no one gets arrested. So,
thank you. Mr. Fish, 30-second rebuttal.
Well, yes, it's good to hear. I hope it happens. I haven't seen any movement except a false promise from Eric Holder, who's now leaving the office. We all talk about it, but the fact of the matter is there's a lot of government and money invested in fighting this thing. We've created a second class of citizenry that goes out there and persecutes people because it's good for your budget. So I think we've got to take a really serious and hard look, and I would like to make it a priority instead of something nice that we ought to look at sometimes in the future.
Senator Begich, your first question for Mr. Fish.
I thought about this last night when I saw the news, and I actually got a copy of it. And Mark, I know you are, like me, have some issues around privacy issues, but there was this letter that I don't know if you saw it on the news last night that's now being sent to people. And I saw a news story, and it was basically laying out how people now get a letter in there by one of these outside groups, one of these third-party funders, that are basically telling you about your neighbors, about you, and then they're going to come back and find out how you voted. I think this is outrageous, but I don't know if you've seen this, and I'd be curious about your response to this and the protection of privacy for Alaskans. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but.
Yes, I have seen it. And it's a real quandary, folks, because we're supposed to have an open and fair system, you know, and that also includes, you know, accounting for votes. You know, any politician will tell you, any candidate will tell you, they go to the registered voters list and see who's voted where. And they get to find these people and encourage them to vote for themselves. So it's part of our system. How do we do that and allow third-party guys like me the same access as the big party guys without close it down to the general population? I don't think it can be done. Yes, they should have more care, but the people that are doing this are going to suffer the consequences. Voting records are public, people, not the how you vote. But a registered voter needs to be known where they're at so we can go and talk to them. It's a way that we keep the process going.
Thanks, Mark. I think I agree with that part, but I guess the part that I have a problem with, I read this letter. I didn't get one, but not I'm aware of. It's all my mailbox I haven't looked at the last couple of days, so it could be in there. But it's this group called Opportunity Alliance PAC. Who are these people? No one knows. We did a little research. This is part of the Koch brothers group, again, pouring millions into this campaign, but they don't disclose. At least the state law requires disclosure of your top three funders, and they don't even disclose it here. So to me, this is way beyond a privacy issue. It's also about knowing who these folks are and where their money's coming from.
Thank you. Mr. Fish, your second question for Senator Begich, please.
Well, Senator, you know, you stated here and often in public venues that you think every party should be have a seat at the table in these debates. And I appreciate that. I appreciate your stumping that. I'm trying hard to get in televised debates as well. I haven't had much success. So I'm wondering, the simple question is will you stand firm on that principle and not attend any televised debates that don't include me?
Well, that's a tough one, because I got the Koch brothers beating on my head, and I got to have some airtime. So, Mark, that's a great question, and it's a fair question. I don't have a solid answer for you, but I will say this. As I've done since 1988 when I ran for assembly, there were seven people running against me. You know, I wasn't going to get the same airtime as anyone else, and I did a rogue activity. I just showed up. You know, they weren't giving me the airtime. I showed up. And you know what? I got some airtime because of that. Sometimes the system, just like we just talked about before we came in here, public radio and TV invited Mark. They just disinvited him. Outrageous. Publicly funded public radio and TV. And I think it's outrageous. And that's at least one form. And I've seen a lot of debates on public TV and public radio with all kinds of people. And, you know, why they're now limiting, no disrespect, Andrew, why they're... Don't take that from my last 10 seconds, that laugh.
Cut his mic.
Yeah. But, Mark, it's a great question. And I'll tell you, I don't know if I'd give up the time, but I'm going to be talking about it, as you know, because I think it's outrageous. And especially public TV and public radio should be the one last place that people should have access.
30 seconds.
Well, I think it's important when we have principles that we should stand on them. You know, if it's a matter of style, fine. No problem. We can be flexible. But the very principle of universal suffrage, as Cameron said about the situation in China, it's not only, you know, having the right to vote, it's having a right to choose who to vote for. And we're all on the ballot. Libertarians have spent 40 years. We've been on the ballot. We've earned the right on the ballot. We're exploiting that ballot access, and we should be included in these debates.
Senator Begich, your second question for Mr. Fish.
Just before I ask the question, it just made me think of something. I think my other opponent would love not to have the debates because he's not here today and others, so I think he would like that, so I'm not going to give him that break. Let me ask you this, and I think we might agree on this. The Patriot Act, FISA, NSA, all these groups that are in these pieces of legislation, give me your thoughts on it. I think I know where you're at, but I want to hear it, and if you can be very definitive, because I know... Dan has not been definitive on these.
Well, Patriot Act, no. There's a lot better ways that we could handle it. We don't need to intrude on people's civil liberties. You know, we don't need no star chamber to investigate or some kind of inquisitor, secret inquisitor council of judges to determine whether I'm a terrorist or not outside of the process of law. We don't need that. It's been tried before. It's a failure. You know, and National Defense Authorization Act, there's things in there that are terrible for us. You know, there's drone technology right up here. We're expanding training areas over the Richardson Highway in state land. Well, you know, they're going to be training, and I've been in the Guard, and I know what we do with infrared. You know, they're going to be looking at all that traffic, all those homes, and basically giving an illegal search. And I want to know if that information is being turned over to law enforcement. I want to know if they're going to be using military weapons in order against our own citizens.
Thanks, Mark. I had a feeling we were close on this one. The Patriot Act's come up three times in front of the U.S. Senate for reauthorization. I've opposed it. NSA, I've seen some more briefings that tell me by far they've gone too far. It's important to have a balance between what's going on in the issues of threat of terrorism, but also you got to balance it against civil liberties and protecting our citizens from invasion of privacy. So I'm on a piece of legislation now to restrict the NSA and what they can do and what they cannot do into the future. So again, thank you, Mark, for your answer.
Thank you. Our last topic is fiscal responsibility. Senator Begich, we'll start with you. Your record during your tenure as Anchorage mayor has come under criticism, critics say you left a $17 million budget deficit, and supporters say you inherited a $33 million hole from the previous mayor. How do you respond to these competing charges?
There's a 30-second ad on TV, but here's how I respond to it. We came in half the year when I was mayor, elected mayor 2003, a $33 million deficit. We didn't complain. We didn't blame. We got busy. We dealt with it. We got a zero increase from our labor unions. We went and moved some budgets and cut some budgets. When we left, every year, requirement, balance the budget by law. That's the requirement. Assembly approves it. Now, what happened? We went into a financial crash, and the net result is you end up with paper losses, which we did have. But that did not, because of the services we're requiring. And I know they want to continue to hammer the $17 million. And lo and behold, 6-7 months later, when the market got better, the surplus occurred for the city. I mean, think about this. In your own permanent fund check this year, why is it double? Because 2009 was dropped off the five-year falling averages because the market got better. So it was a paper loss. And I understand they're going to use this over and over again. And the reality is I've taken those skills and those abilities. Look at what we've done on the federal budget. When I came in, it was $1.4 trillion per year annual budget deficit. What is it today? 70% less in 5.5 years. Because we grew the economy, at the same time we cut the budget. People felt it. I heard it. But those are the ways we have to deal with this budget in the long term. So I hear what they're saying. They're incorrect. They will continue to say it because that's what they want to say, and they want to spend the millions to prove it otherwise. So I'll just keep pounding back and talk about what I've done on the federal side.
Mr. Fish, a question on fiscal responsibility. The federal government currently has a national debt of $17 trillion. We hear a lot of candidates at election time talking about reducing the national debt. What are your ideas on how the country can reduce the debt?
Well, folks, first thing we have to do is change the basic premise of government. We got to limit it to its sole constitutional functions. Government, as Thomas Paine said, is a necessary evil. It's not a force of good. You're the force of good. Stop looking to government to do good things here or abroad. It cannot. It can only defend your rights to do those good things. So if we used our judgment and went through that filter, we wouldn't have all these expenses. All that money would be freed up and put back into society where it is efficiently used to handle those problems. I'm sure most of you belong to groups that do really good things for people that are hurting. You don't need government to take their cut or manage your affairs when you do that. And I'm sure they'll even say, well, let's partner with that. Well, their partnership is kind of one-sided here, folks. They take and tell, and you do. You know, we can do better than that. Our economic solutions will be solved when we realize that we are our own masters and stop looking to our government to solve our problems for us.
Thank you. Now we'll move into closing statements. Mr. Fish, since Senator Begich went first in opening statements, you lead with closing statements. 2 minutes, sir.
2 minutes is great. I can ramble on. But I do have to appreciate, you know, what you guys are doing here for us and for you, and inviting all the candidates. I do wish other candidates were here. As you might have noted, you know, I came up here. I'm unscripted. I don't need a yellow tablet or an iPad here with text messages to tell me what to say. So I do make mistakes. I don't speak clearly enough or articulate my messages. But what you're getting here is the real deal. And you know what? The primary thing that a senator has to do is know how to debate. That's his job. If a candidate is not willing to stand and deliver on their own, unscripted, you really got to ask, are they capable of doing their job? You know, nobody's perfect, and nobody is expected to be. But we need to hear real people expressing their real ideas in order for us to make the decisions on where we want to go as a people. It's very important, a very important principle. And I'll reassert this one. This comes back from all my buddies from way back. I'm called a romantic because I always listen to Locke and Roger Williams and Thomas Paine and Frederick Bastiat. They say, don't you have anybody in the 20th century? I said, no. You know? But those guys were right. An individual has a right to life, liberty, and property. Those are three gifts from God, folks. You know, and we need to recognize that. And our government needs, sole purpose isn't to ensure those rights. So that's the filter that I would use in any of these decisions I would make as senator. And I would hope that you would consider me seriously, if nothing else, to let people know that we're sick and tired and done with the sound bites.
Senator Begich.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, the chamber. Thank you all for taking your lunchtime to be here today. Appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to come and be able to talk about the issues in a campaign outside of a 30-second or 15-second soundbite, so thank you for allowing us to do that. This race is about Alaska's future. It's about how we're going to figure out where we go, not only in the next 2 years, but in the next 4 and 6 years. I know my other opponent would love to talk about Obama all the time. Obama is gone in two. This is about a United States Senate seat for the next 6 years. What are we going to do as Alaskans? How are we going to solve the problems that we face together? Not to continue to do what's been going on in this political season of divide and conquer in order to try to get a score point in the political arena. It is about getting things done. You know, I've now served 6 years, and I'm on some significant committees that have made a difference. Being on the Appropriations Committee is a powerful tool for Alaska. Both Senator Murkowski are on that committee. It's very rare to have two senators from the same state on that committee. What's even more rare, because it's never been done, having two senators from the same party from the same state. So the only person who can never get on an Appropriations Committee out of the three of us running is Dan Sullivan, who's not here. You might be able to get on that if you win, because you're a Libertarian. But it's never been done, and that's just a fact. That is an important piece of the equation of how we get things done in Alaska. Just in the last 6 years, we've been able to bring home almost $35 billion to Alaska in order to provide services and federal government assistance where it's needed, also supporting our military all throughout the state. But this race is about Alaska's future. It's about education. It's about how we're going to continue to move forward and open up the Arctic. It's about making sure we provide for our veterans and making sure we have a strong military in our community here and throughout Alaska. I know people want to continue to divide. My goal, many of you know it, I will sit down with anyone. I will go anywhere to figure out how to solve these problems and do what's right for Alaska. I would be honored to have your support and your vote. I look forward to November 4th more than you can imagine. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, campaigning's hard. This election seems like it's gone on for a lifetime. Please, let's give these gentlemen a very hearty round of applause.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with candidates for U.S. Senate. You heard from Democratic incumbent Mark Begich and Libertarian candidate Mark Fish. Republican candidate Dan Sullivan, also running for U.S. Senate, was invited but declined to participate in the chamber's debate. This debate was recorded October 27th at the Denina Center. It was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, and Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow served as moderator. Election Day is coming up in a week on November 4th. For ongoing election coverage, check out our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Monica Gokey.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.